It's time now on the Midweek Drive to actually return to our good friends in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, of course. We're delighted to be able to welcome for her first connection with us from the august, wonderful world of LA, the Director of Marketing for the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, the fabulous Nicolette Atkins. Nicolette, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great, and listening to Jenny, I know I can be grateful this morning for sunshine, and there will be sunshine in LA's future for probably the next few months.
I would have thought so, definitely, because that's just because you're the Director of Marketing. Nicolette, do I detect a slight South African accent there?
You do, indeed.
There we are.
Yes, see, I grew up there.
Just adds the sort of global nature of the whole system there. So share with us first, before we go on to find out about the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra and some of the fabulous things that are coming up in the 2015-2016 season, why did you actually move over to LA?
Well, I married an American musician. Mm-hmm. We had an orchestra in South Africa, and we had recruited musicians from all over the world, including Los Angeles, and there were some from England. But I got hooked up with a guy from LA and moved to Los Angeles about 3 years later. I hate to say that the country took, but the marriage didn't. But I am now married to an opera singer from America. So here we all are.
There we are, exactly. Well, we have a young operetta singer in the studio. That's Eva MacDonald. Are you an opera fan,
I
Eva?
Am, yes, I do like opera.
There we are. Excellent. From our grand sonoras there. We've also got Professor Jason Whittaker, obviously the quintessential Blake scholar, as well as being head of the School of English and Journalism at the University of Lincoln, and Christy Bond. But let's move into the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra. I mean, we've been featuring, obviously, LACO for a good few years as far as the Midweek Drive is concerned. It's really generated an aspect of quality throughout. And Jeffrey Kahane, of course, I can't believe he's actually starting his 19th season as the orchestra's musical director.
I know. That is... it's not quite a record. There is someone else in this area who's been with their orchestra for a little bit longer, but certainly is a record for us, and we're delighted to have him. He's established a great rapport with the audience. He's trained them to enjoy both new music and classical old classics juxtaposed with each other in the same concert, and so we have a lot of fun when we go to our performances.
Now, looking ahead to upcoming treats, of course, you've got the first of three of Mozart's Golden Period piano concertos being presented. You can't go wrong with a bit of Wolfgang Amadeus, can you?
No, you can't. It's great for a marketer. We love it when Mozart's on the program.
Exactly. You know, he might have had a fairly short lifestyle, but by heaven, he was prolific, wasn't he, Jason? You know, he was churning stuff out there.
And like everybody else, I will always get going for Mozart.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an easy, easy win.
And of course, the other aspect, because we mentioned obviously the contemporary material, you've got Los Angeles-based composer Derek Spiva, a work that's influenced by Ghanaian polyrhythms and traditional West African drumming. So you're really covering the continuum there, it would seem.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And Derek is one of the nicest people you could hope to meet. My favorite story is that, you know, in Los Angeles, everybody is something else. Your waiter is an actor, and your, you know, Uber driver is a screenwriter. And in Derek's case, he is a composer. He also teaches. He leads a West African drumming circle. And he is also the head usher at one of the venues where we perform, and that's how he came to know about LACO. So we were very intrigued when he was given a commission to have write this piece, and the world premiere will be with us in September. So Derek is, I think people will walk into the theater, and he will walk onto the stage, as we always announce the composers from the stage and allow them to give a little talk about their piece before it is played. And I'm sure any number of people in the audience will look at Derek and think, I know that guy.
Did
from
you
somewhere.
Show me to your seat? Yes. But he was obviously just doing research on that particular perspective, which is great stuff. Christy, any thoughts or questions for you about the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra?
I would like to know what your favorite instrument is.
Wow, that's an interesting question. I grew up training as a ballet dancer, so piano is probably my favorite because that's what I listen to in class. But I do love the oboe. It's so mellow and soothing. So, and we have a wonderful oboist, Alan Vogel, who is has been with the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra for 44 years. And later in the season, in March, he will participate with the three other longest-serving wind principals of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra in another world premiere, written especially for them by an Austrian composer who lives in L.A. now and works in the movie industry, and his name is Gernot Wolfgang.
Just adds to the quality of the whole thing. Talking about celebrities, of course, we always like to share that. I see that returning to the work of Derek Spiva, you've also got the West Coast debut of a certain Michael Barenboim, who's the son of legendary conductor, in every sense of the word, Daniel Barenboim, and a keen violinist at the same time as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and we're very excited about that. Michael is very excited to come to LA and perform on the West Coast for the first time, so that is a good thing for us. Jeffrey Kahane, one of his great qualities is the ability to recognize talent in the making, and so there are a number of very famous violinists or very famous violinists and pianists today who got their start with the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra. You may have heard of the Chinese pianist Lang Lang, the violinist Hilary Hahn, there's a cellist Elisa Weilerstein, and they all had their debuts in Los Angeles with the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra because Jeffrey recognized their talent first.
Now, we always like to say that people might argue, look, you're in Lincoln, England, not Lincoln, Nebraska. Why are you spending time with the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra? We like to feel music's international, Jason, from that particular perspective, and it addresses from that. Although I have to say, it's time the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra came to the Lincoln Performing Arts Center. I think we need to.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would be
the first one on the plane.
Well, I think we would.
Your international listeners can go onto our website. We do have a number of videos. We're trying to expand the number of videos we post. So laco.org, laco.org, can check us out, read our blogs, a lot of interesting things online. Including excerpts from performances from our Stradfest, which was 2 years ago, where we had, trying to remember if it was 7 or 8 violinists playing Stradivarius instruments on the stage at the same time. And it was spectacular.
I've got to confess that it took me quite a while to get into chamber music, because for many people it was seen as, it just wasn't quite connecting. But then you suddenly find it played by top musicians. And you realise, actually, there's a wealth of material there from, obviously, the classics, the Vivaldis, Beethovens, Mozarts, and so on, that does actually make that connection. Eva, are you a follower of chamber music per se, so on?
Chamber music? Again, it depends what sort of mood I'm in. I have a lot of different moods to go with different types of music, but I do like to listen to chamber music sometimes.
Sounds as though the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra should definitely be accessible. That. Jason, questions from yourself.
Well, I was just wondering, it's interesting what you're saying about the Chamber Orchestra being such a hothouse for new talent, and I was wondering, is it just the one person contributes that, or is there something about the city itself that also, you know, will encourage that on the global stage?
Yeah, I think that LA is on the cutting edge in any number of ways. Mm. Certainly is becoming a destination city for cultural travel.
Yes.
With, you know, we have a wonderful art museum, we have the Getty, we have the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, the MoCA, they're building a new art museum, the Broad, which I think will focus on contemporary music, on contemporary art. And so there's a lot of innovation that takes place in Los Angeles, and I think that that gives a rise to that. And we're also open to new stars.
Well, I was kind of wondering if there's something like London and New York, and those older centres are a bit more staid in their ways.
Got to say as well, in terms of cost, I mean, having just shelled out a significant sum for a Royal Albert Hall concert in November that I'm attending, for students, an all-access pass for $30 that includes admission to more than 10 performances per season.
Yep.
That's amazing!
That is
amazing.
That's,
And it's surprising how many students take advantage of it. And interestingly, most of them are not actual music students. They are people who love music and perhaps played a little bit of piano or, you know, listened, or like me, you know, was a dancer and liked music. And then when they go to college and they hear about the All Access Pass,
yes,
we find that they are the ones who come and see performances. So it's been a great thing for us, and we love having them there.
Not that we would say this is a mathematically oriented station. That means basically performance costs $3, which in translating terms is about £1.50 for the quality of Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra. Can you believe that, Christy?
I wish we had something like that here. That would be amazing.
I mean, it is something which maybe sometimes the arts councils need to think about that, and indeed government as well, that if we want to encourage the arts, we need to make them affordable.
Yes. Indeed.
Well, I think that I don't know if this is true in the UK, but I would imagine that you have student rush, which in Los Angeles, if you don't have an all-access pass, you can still buy a ticket on a rush basis for $12 if you're a student. But I like the all-access pass idea because I think, like everybody else, you don't want to go to the theater, and it's particularly in Los Angeles, drive and park to find that a performance is sold out. So this the All Access Pass gives the students an opportunity to reserve their seats 2 weeks in advance.
Just works perfectly. Let's briefly talk about West Side Connections. A season's theme is Music and the Mind, which explores connections between music and the mind and rapid advancements in neuroscience. I can see William Blake being in his element here.
He always manages to be in his element,
yes, exactly,
with anything. That comes,
exactly. From your own point of view, Nicolette, this is a wonderful way of actually connecting both art, science, and the whole human condition, it might be said.
Yes, that when we decided to start this chamber music series, our goal was to give it a little twist, because that's what we like to do at LACO. And we decided that we would try and look at how different human enterprises influence each other. So we've done poetry, we've done Los Angeles as inspiration, because obviously it is a city that inspires. We did the culinary arts, and we are now doing music in the mind. A lot of new and interesting things coming in. One of the people who will be a guest, and I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head, but he is a professor who is in San Francisco, and he's been doing research on dream states. And it seems as though your brain, when you are creative, your brain is...
You want to get those alpha rhythms going. Move those alpha rhythms forward.
It's in exactly the same space as you are when you're dreaming. So dream on, is what I say.
I'm just looking at Schubert Unfinished as well. I mean, I've always liked Schubert ever since his Trout Symphony, because Tickling Trout is really what it's all about, I feel, in many ways. We're just working through that. But,
are you a fisherman?
I wouldn't say I'm a sort of active fisherman, but I like the calmness of actually just sort of seeing the way in which rods are cast and various other bits and pieces.
So you sit with a rod with no line.
Exactly.
Just on the bank watching the river flow.
It's a metaphysical fishing side of things. That's the classic side. But yes, that's Schubert Unfinished, Saturday, September the 19th. And September 20th, so all heaps of links. You can find out all details about this on the laco.org, that's laco.org website. The strapline, Making Great Music Personal. Was that your own sort of copy, Nicolette? Making Great Music Personal? Because I think it's a great sort of scenario.
In fact, it was.
Yeah.
When I first joined, take credit here.
Yeah.
When I first joined LACO, which was about 14 years ago, I knew that what we wanted to do was find exactly what makes us special and what makes us different from all of the other musical offerings in the city. And, you know, we're lucky enough to have the Los Angeles Philharmonic also in our wonderful city. And, you know, why should someone come and hear a LACO performance rather than a full performance? Why would they choose us? And I really looked at the audience and looked at the experience and listened to a lot of people, and then realized that what made us special and different was that we do make it personal. Jeff loves to get up on the stage and tell, you know, a personal anecdote about why he likes a piece of music. We have question and answer time in our Baroque Conversation series and also our Westside Connection series. So, and people become very attached to our musicians themselves. There are only 40 players in a chamber orchestra, so you can see each of the people on the stage, and you can hear each of the instruments, which means that they have to play really well, which luckily our musicians do.
I would have anticipated that, really, that they play reasonably effectively for that one.
But it's very exposed, and that creates an intimacy and an excitement amongst the musicians, and that flows into the audience. And I was took me a long time. I kept writing things on my refrigerator in the middle of the night, and eventually it was okay.
Making great music personal. Genius. We very briefly mentioned, of course, new executive director Scott Harrison, who's joined the whole package. We'll speak again later about that, all the great material that's coming through. Nicolette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut with us on the production this evening?
I have. I can't wait to be asked back.
Well, a round of applause for Nicolette. Very well then, Nicolette Atkins, Director of Marketing, Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra. We will connect with you again very soon. Take care now.
Alrighty. Thanks, Alex.
This is Rachel Abbott, and when I'm not producing all manner of audio goodness for On Broadcast, I always like to check out the latest news and views of Emma Tinson, Jessica Ward, and other midweek drivettes on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM.
Okay, so Jessica is still in the Isle of Man, and Christy Bond is doing a fine, a sterling job from that perspective. We have Ian MacDonald and Professor Jason Whittaker, so it's all good, even though we actually have the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra with Vivaldi's Four Seasons in the background there to greet Emma Tinson. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thank you.
So, because obviously we're squeezing in Phil Leonis in a few moments, for once he's not going to get the final word, because that's going to go to Richard Edwards, the editor of SFX magazine, on the show today. What have you made of what bits you've heard of the show so far, Emma Tinson?
Well, I'm afraid I haven't heard a lot of the show, sadly.
Thank heavens for podcasts, then.
I know, I can listen back to it. But yeah, my intermittent internet has failed me today, I'm afraid. But from the odd bits and bobs that I've heard, they've been very good. So, well done, guys. Oh. And you handled the confusion with getting Cameron on the line very well as well. So, you know, you've done very well.
Confusion, Emma. You've been here in the studio before where the phone line has decided, I can't be bothered today. Just can't be bothered. Just don't want to
It's a very stressful moment, isn't it?
It's one of those times where you think, okay, well, you'll just take the show and actually just go back to square one again. But we like to think of it as, you know, crafting the art of the medium itself.
Exactly.
Christy, any quick questions for Emma?
Yes, I want to know, did you catch the end of last week's show? Because Phil Learness was very hurt by your comments.
Yeah. I know. I didn't mean it in a hurtful way.
No, he was very like, well, I don't want to say too much. I might offend Emma.
No, of course. He knows really that we love the fact that he talks a lot. He's always good. It's very good on the radio that people talk. If we were silent, it would be very difficult. Yeah,
telepathy is not really the best way forward for radio, fine, even though obviously there is scientific evidence for telepathy working on that basis. It's critical. Well, Emma, any questions that you'd like to put to the head of the School of English and Journalism, Professor Jason Whittaker?
Yes, of course. One of the few things that I did hear on today's show was that you like to specialise in William Blake.
And
I don't know a lot about the poet, really. I've not really done much research into poetry. So what is it about William Blake that you really enjoy?
What I really like about Blake was that he was one of the first artists to decide to entirely create his own way of seeing the world, the universe and everything. And that's one of the reasons why he became so popular after his death. Because rather than trying to follow what had gone before, he was that generation that later became known as the Romantics, who said, no, I must create everything anew, because that's the only way that I can possibly go through life. Does that answer the question in part?
I shall have to go and look at some of his work then, because it sounds really good.
Oh, yes. And he was an artist as well as a painter, so... his painting of Newton, which is outside the British Museum as a sculpture, is probably one of his most famous.
Look it up on that thing called the internet.
Which is intermittent for you at the moment, of course. Yes. So good advice there, Alex. Yes, look up something you can't use now and you'll find out all you need to know.
This is one of the reasons why, you know, I'm obviously sort of guiding Emma through her dissertation as we speak. You know, it's a process which is there. How's it coming on, by the way, Emma?
It's okay. It's intermittent as well, I'd say, at the moment.
You sound very, very sort of disheartened about the whole thing. I'm not going to lie to you, Emma.
Don't worry, Emma. You'll be back in the studios before you know where we are.
Bang, yes, it'll be very comforting.
You'll be a level 3 journalism student. You'll be welcome back, and it'll be fantastic in every sense of the words. Good stuff. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us on the programme today, Emma Tinson?
I have. It's been lovely.
Back again soon?
Yes, of course.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drum, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look to a new home in the sun, flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
After the Gold Rush prelude, which hopefully will take us neatly round to our ace director, Chilpack Hollywood co-host, erstwhile tutor, generally all round good guy, even though he doesn't quite rate Henry Cavill in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I don't know why. Phil Learness, how are you, sir?
Oh my lord.
this is sounding a bit woolly again, Phil. Say a few words and then I'll have to decide immediately whether we have to call you back again. Try one more time. That's not working. It's. I would say pretty much unintelligible there from that perspective, which is most unfortunate. So we'll have to cut that from that particular perspective and take something completely different. Honestly, sometimes, Jason, you think the whole thing. Well, I think it's fair to say that even William Blake, in his most obtuse, would have found it difficult to make
to
any
interpret that.
To exactly.
Yes.
So we will try in a few seconds to actually reach him one more time to take us around to that. Jason, we haven't really asked you, musically speaking, we've had a fair range. Any particular artists that spring to mind from your own choice that you actually think, yes, it's time we heard some?
Well, I did notice that when you started the show, I'm kind of slightly loath to admit this now, there's a piece of music in the background, Queen's One Vision, one of my favourite bands ever, Laibach. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if people will have come across them, but they did a version of Queen as a Wagnerian hymn called Geburt einer Nation, which is one of my favourite tracks. It would be one of my Desert Island discs.
We will
and
clearly,
I highly recommend it. I think you should play it sometime in Siren.
We will clearly actually set that up for a range of things.
In fact, I think a whole lieback afternoon, one of my new tasks in the forthcoming year will be to have regular lieback afternoons, because I will enjoy it if nobody else does.
I think clearly we shall make sure, I'll ensure that Andrew David is made well aware of that.
I'm making policy up on the hoof. No, you do realise.
It's prerogative. Very
absolutely
important. Meanwhile, Queen, yes, Flash Gordon, I think probably in the same sort of field, just about.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
An obscure body in the SK system, Your Majesty. The inhabitants refer to it as the planet Earth.
How peaceful it looks.
Most effective, Your Majesty. Will you destroy this Earth?
Later. I like to play with things a while. Before annihilation.
You only have 20 minutes to save the universe. Isn't that right, Phil Linus?
I don't know if we can save the universe, but we can try to, make our little small corner of it a little bit brighter and cheerier.
Phil, for once, we're not going to give you the last word, because that has to go to Richard Edwards tonight. But from your own perspective, Phil, share with us what you've made of the program, if you've managed to tune in from sunny Los Angeles as your accompaniment to coffee and whatever else you consume on a morning in L.A.
I made out of it? I made a hat. That's what I made out of it. I turned it into a hat.
How William Blake-esque of you. It's wonderful.
Since apparently I'm running short on time already, I'll go right to the stuff that captured my imagination and is never far from my thoughts, which is this idea of letting go and of trying to work smarter rather than work harder, because I think we all feel this pressure, no matter what our age is, no matter whether we're students in school or we're out in the professional world or we're taking care of our family responsibilities. It feels like we just have more and more and more responsibilities and less time to accomplish them. And so this is why the conversation like the one you had earlier is so important, to remind all of us, to give all of us permission to realize that it isn't about working faster, it isn't about working harder, it's about working smarter. It's to remind us that we are all of us creative individuals, and so the answer is to get creative with our solution on how we approach our responsibilities. And sometimes that means taking more time and trusting that if we take care of the big things, the little things will fall into place. I loved the story about ironing underwear and socks. When I was in film school, when I was in college, this was my form of meditation. Literally, I would iron everything. In fact, not only would I iron all my socks, I would start ironing my roommate's stuff without even realizing it, because, that phrase, we'll iron it out. We'll iron out all the wrinkles to an idea. That's literally when I would do it. And nowadays, I don't need to iron, so I do all dishes by hand. That's where I find my most meditative thought process. And so what I want to do, what I want to ask Professor Jason and your co-presenters and you, Alex, is what are your unique activities when you find yourself maybe in a creative block or bumping up against it in some way? How do you disengage? What activity allows you to disengage so that you still feel like you're being productive, but it enables you to come up with an answer for that thing way over there?
Jason.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to ask somebody else this, because if I tell the truth, it involves Xboxes. So I'll deflect the question and actually say the creative slough is actually that period of kicking back is something that's really, really important, because I spent a lot of my life studying poetry. So I've alternated between being really interested in the literary arts in particular and then working as a journalist. And journalism tends to be full on. You have very little time downtime, and it's the next deadline, the next deadline, the next deadline. And then whenever you read anything about the great poets, the great writers, almost without exception, they have periods of highly intensive bursts of activity and then long periods where what other people would see as writer's block, as a creative block, is actually the period where they just mull things over. And if you try to force it, you're not really being, or you're not being creative in a way that kind of can produce that great art. What you're actually doing, you're being creative, for example, like a journalist or a producer, you have to make stuff and you have a deadline and there's people relying on you. But if you actually then want to produce something that has that additional spark, very often you need those periods of what people would think of as writer's block. You need the downtime, the period where you simply reflect and mull and enjoy the experience.
I love, Jason, it reminds me of a famous old Hollywood adage about producers who think that writing and typing are the same thing.
Yes.
And but I love that you said the Xbox, because you feel some shame about that, apparently, as if embracing hand-eye coordination, as if embodying a creative energy in a different way isn't an important part of the process. I mean, if your answer had been, I go take a yoga class, you wouldn't have felt ashamed about it, because it's more, I think, acceptable that people say, oh, that's like going to the gym or something like that. But it is. It's about embodying these energies and let them get into us in a different way. And I always feel for journalists, especially because of this idea of deadlines. Mm. Obviously, as a filmmaker, I'm under them. But yes. I'm at this point now where I realize, in this kind of global corporate setting we're in, where each individual job is expected to take shorter and shorter, yes. along with that job comes a smaller and smaller paycheck, usually.
I've encountered that one.
And the answer for that is, well, you can do more stories now. You can make more movies now. You can do more assignments because you can work faster. Yeah. So that'll make up for the money you're losing. And I finally got to the point a few years ago where I realized, wait a minute. The good news about these jobs costing less money or paying me less money is that they cost less money. So you know what? If they value me, I get to negotiate more time. You want to pay me less? Fine. I'm going to take three times as long.
Yes.
And therefore, I can do the work at a more measured pace when I'm ready for it.
Yes.
I can bang it out when it's ready,
yes.
when I've done all the baking on it, as I like to call it. You know, as a baker knows, the work doesn't get done when you're staring at what's in the oven.
Yeah.
And you kind of got to let the bread rise on its own. And
then return to it when it is ready, yes.
Yeah. So I feel for journalists, because I don't know how you can embrace the same thing that I and some of my creative colleagues are realizing, which is the powers that be will give us more time as long as we are okay with the more restrictive financing. But the truth is, of course, the more time you take in any creative endeavor, the better you are at figuring out how to stretch those resources, how to use them more wisely. Things cost more in both our energy and our time and our money in all our resources when we have to rush.
Yes, indeed.
More haste, less speed. Christy.
I totally agree with what Jason said about writer's block, because I did an interview the other day, and the interviewer asked me how long it had taken me to write my book, and I said 4 years. And this person nearly fell off the chair. She said, oh, did you have writer's block? And I said, no, I didn't have writer's block. I had periods of time where I realised I needed to be alone with the story for longer periods before I wrote anything, because if not, what was going to come out onto the page was going to be rushed and less than it should have been. And I walk quite a lot and I cook, which also helps me work through things. There's something very therapeutic about cutting vegetables for me.
Is it like ironing socks then, Christy?
Not quite like ironing socks. Also, if all else fails, I do find that punching things helps me quite a lot. Going to the gym and
headbutting loudspeakers.
Yes, headbutting loudspeakers. If all else fails, use violence.
The views of some of our correspondents do not necessarily recommend of Siren 107.3 FM.
Yes, but no, I do agree. I think writer's block is a kind of invented kind of thing to for people to justify why they're not seeming to be actively working
well,
when
Joe
really
Gould
you're working
didn't
all
have
the
writer's
time.
Block. He just couldn't remember where he'd actually sort of store all these books.
No, you are. You're working all the time. That is the brilliant phrase. You are working all the time. And getting back to what the earlier guest said, you know, if we have to free ourselves, it's important not only to treat ourselves kindly, to free ourselves from this idea that we have to prove our value by what we're achieving or accomplishing, and realize that our value lies in who we are rather than what we do. But also it's important because we give other people permission to do the same. So if we realize we're always working towards something, that it's not about, look, no one loves to-do lists more than me. I'm working multiple to-do lists all the time. I love a good check mark like you would not believe. But the thing that I've gotten to in what is it, Alex? My chronologically enhanced,
experientially enhanced, chronologically gifted. Either the term was useful.
Okay, sure. Tomato, tomato. But what I've learned to realize is that my to-do lists need to include everything. Not just the professional, not just the personal responsibilities, but also the things that I need to do to take care of myself, that all these things should have equal weight. And therefore, as long as I'm gravitating towards what is on that list that I'm feeling in the moment, then I know I'm going to, whether it be do the dishes, or whether it be finish an edit, or color correct something, or go run the errands, if I'm gravitating to what I'm feeling in the moment, I know I'm going to do my best job possible on that. I'm going to connect with it the most deeply I am capable of, and it's therefore going to show me the most and teach me the most about who I am.
And you forgive Emma Tinson for last week, Phil? Or was it the reverse of that?
You know what? I can't remember that long ago, Alex. In the words of Rick in Casablanca, I never make plans that far in advance, and I can't remember that long ago.
Because we need to go to Richard Edwards, of course, the editor of SFX magazine, I need to go. Eva, would you like to ask Phil those last two questions, please?
Phil, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Not yet. It's incomplete, and it's incomplete because you will all agree with me in noticing that one person didn't answer the question, which was Alex Lefchuk. So I will get off the line if given the promise that he will answer what his version of the Xbox is.
In 168 hours from now, I will give you a guarantee that'll happen, or thereabouts. I think actually just taking time to appreciate where we are, and it goes to perceptions. Sometimes you just need to have a moment's stillness, whether it's meditation, whatever you sort of look for, focus on that, and then hopefully things will begin to make sense. Hopefully.
Boy, you should have been coaching Henry Cavill in his performance so that he wouldn't stop steamrolling through everything and kill off 2 hours of our time. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you next week.
From Los Angeles to Bath. Well, who would have thought it, but that's what we do on the Madrid Drive. We go to Richard Edwards, editor of SFX magazine, and the newly revamped, repackaged, regenerated SFX magazine, which Christy Bond said in this very studio when she looked at your column photograph, Richard, was just quality without, effectively. Richard Edwards with the mistress, or the master. How are you, Richard?
I'm very good. Yeah, thank you.
Excellent.
Hello.
Yeah, it's very. Are you slightly out of breath? Have you been busily running around the office or something? Or is it just a case of looking after a small child?
Both. I've just run upstairs. So.
Well, raves, watching Ant-Man made you very happy. Watching Terminator Genesis made you very sad. Never mind.
Yeah.
Any particular line you'd like to go on with respect to that, or shall we just sort of ignore Terminator completely?
I think it kind of sums it up pretty well. But I thought Ant-Man was absolutely wonderful, lots of fun, did everything it should have done. Terminator Genesis is just... Why bother?
Well, I mean, only 2 weeks ago I was saying the same thing about the Fantastic Four, as Christy will attest to. Was it your line that I would have rather chewed off a limb than actually sort of watched it? It's astounding. I mean, I daren't ask what SFX have actually given, but I have seen a couple of reviews in other magazines, Starburst, that actually sort of scored it slightly higher, gave it an 8 out of 10. I couldn't believe that.
Our review is not that good.
No. I mean, obviously, there are critics around the whole base, but they'd miss the point. Anyway, Jason, as somebody who used to have a lot of contacts with Future Publishing, wearing your hat, of course, with...
Working for a competitor, I sent to add, but yeah, I used to work in computer magazines and tech industry, so I used to know lots of people. And also, I've just moved up to Lincoln from Cornwall, so we had dealings with Future Publishing at Falmouth University, where I was working previously.
And Richard, if you can recall, Jason was the legend that we used to officially launch a Tally Fantasy Society. I say used, of course. We asked and requested, and he duly performed.
I was wound up and released at the front of the room, I do believe.
Phenomenal from that point of view. So, Jason, any questions you want to put to Richard about life, the universe, SFX, Doctor Who, or even Wayward Pines?
Yeah, a whole host of questions actually about the relaunch of the magazine. Sort of that must have really taken up a huge amount of time and energy. How are you feeling with the new results?
I'm really happy with it. You know, you kind of go in and you never actually know how it's going to turn out until it comes back from the printers. But no, it basically ticked all the boxes that we set out to achieve when we started. So I was really happy with it.
I mean, it looks fantastic. Alex has very kindly been passing copies around, which we were looking at before it started. And you know, I worked as a magazine editor for years, and that when you get that copy in your hands and it's your baby, as it were, that it's a feeling almost second to none. I'll leave the real baby to one side for the moment, but yeah, yes.
It was really good.
Yes.
It was one of those sort of magazines are in the office, run around. It really was proper exciting, and it's like you don't know until you look at it on screen. When you look at it on screen, how it's actually going to feel and how it's all going to flow. I was really happy with it.
Yes.
I sense it's a lot cleaner in design. I mean, obviously, there's a certain irony in sort of talking about design and issues on a predominantly audio medium, but it does actually work on that basis. And we were just saying with Jason earlier that clearly the brand of GamesRadar /SFX/TotalFilm and so on has kind of, it's become much more a brand in itself, hasn't it, Richard?
Well, being part of it, yeah. I mean, GamesRadar is a mega brand. There's many millions of users on it, and obviously us and Total Film are part of that online, and also us and Total Film, we do talk to each other, which has advantages for both of us.
Our SFX US editor Tara Bennett, do you even write for both magazines?
She does. Yes. Well, I mean, I occasionally appear on the pages of Total Film as well.
But will you be crossing over into the new Crime quarterly that's being launched together with, of course, Comic Scene? So you're getting a return to comic heroes, plus, of course, a Crime quarterly that's coming out.
Oh, Crime Heroes. Mm. Sorry, Crime Heroes. That's something totally different. Crime Scene launches in September, and that's basically like SFX for crime, which is just huge. There is so much crime TV in books. So I thought, yes, this is a really cool... I think people will want to read a magazine about it. And yes, I do appear in it.
There we are. So let's say if we can guess the intro. Have you got any ideas to what this might be? Any thoughts at all on those first beats? It's not the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, but it is an American TV series. Any thoughts, Richard Edwards? If I said I see dead people, would that help? Got very quiet, Richard. Are you still online? Yes.
I have.
If I said Isn't it ironic that you have an actor called Matt Dillon? He ends up being a marshal in a town. Marshal Dillon, Gunsmoke. It's meant to be. But it wasn't a Gunsmoke, so what is it?
Obviously, Wayward Pines.
It is Wayward Pines, the latest incarnation and the series which suggests that M. Night Shyamalan has actually got his mojo back. Have you seen it as yet? Is it a theme that you actually say, oh yes, well it's just like The Prisoner, or it's just like an M. Night Shyamalan movie where there's an extended sort of period where you think, oh, it's taking this line, and then suddenly it throws you into a completely different direction?
I haven't actually watched it yet. Good heavens. It's on my...
He's been busy relaunching a magazine. Yes.
No one can watch everything. But yeah, I know a bit about it. I probably know a little bit more than I would like to, which is one of the pitfalls of
I mean, no spoilers, but suffice it to say, it's a long time in the future, after a fashion. I think maybe The Prisoner. I don't know.
Well, I don't think Shyamalan makes things without twists. Or when he does make things without twists, they don't work. So, you know, he's on familiar territory, isn't he?
Oh, have we got any Wayward Pines followers in the... No. Oh, well, there we are then. So, Jason, you haven't...
I'm playing the Xbox too much to watch TV. I think we've established that fact already.
It'll all look very good for the development routines next year, I'm sure. That's all about. Something else to work through. Christy, questions for Richard.
I do have a question for you, actually, because you and I had a bit of a discussion about The Walking Dead while you were here in lovely Lincoln with us. Yep. And I wanted to know if you'd had a chance to tune into the new Fear the Walking Dead and your thoughts without spoilers. If you had,
I haven't watched episode one yet. I'm hearing that it's okay. People who've seen it, like, it's not brilliant, but you know, for a first episode, it's fine. I think a lot of people are. What's the point of this? I mean, it's set in a different time to. In a way to what the original show was, because this is actually just as the outbreak starting, which we never saw in the original show. So I think it's one that's going to have to, people are going to have to stick with a little bit and see where it goes.
Isn't that just like Zed Nation? I mean, are we not sort of just ODing on zombie scenarios?
The overwhelming feeling I've got from people I've spoken to about the show, because I haven't seen it myself yet, was where are all the zombies? That was what that's what people have said to me. It was, there weren't any zombies in it. I want more zombies. So,
yeah.
Well, but be careful what you wish for, because, you know, start of the outbreak, you know, there's very few, but then they start getting eaten and it all gets dangerous.
You've even got Bruce Campbell making a TV series debut, battling zombies as he did in the original Sam Raimi zombie scenario there. It's far too many zombies.
Ash versus Evil Dead, yes. Mm. Well, you know, Ash is one of those characters I think that there's always going to be an audience for, so taking it to TV is actually not a bad idea.
Well, I'm sure it'll all work splendidly. But the elephant in the room remains the Fantastic Four. Eva, of course, has clearly said in previous weeks that Rise of the Silver Surfer is a favourite of yours.
I have, yes.
Exactly. Have you been to see the latest Josh Trank experience? Yeah.
No, I haven't. I'll have to.
Have you managed to catch it in betwixt a relaunch of a magazine and other factors as well, Richard Edwards?
I was actually going to see it last week, and I watched Mission Impossible instead.
Good
decision. which was probably the better choice. I mean, it didn't really screen very early for critics. I think it's one of those that's going to be put down as everybody knew it wasn't going to work, and there's stories of that it wasn't a particularly smooth production, and it just feels like one of those films where everything just went wrong.
I think
as well, Fantastic Four is just a really difficult thing to get right. You know, this was when it started, it was very much a 60s comic book, and you know, even the writer of it, Simon Kinberg, said, you know, it's kind of hokey now.
But why don't they then just set it in the 1960s? It works.
I think that's a really good idea. Yeah.
There we are. I think Philian has even suggested that. Mind you, he didn't think Man from U.N.C.L.E. was up to much. That was dreadful. I thought that was fine. But anyway, it's all open to debates. And personally, I think until we actually get an oral history of the contemporary world in movie theatres across the globe, then Joe Gould will not rest easy in his grave. Any questions you'd like to put to the team, Richard, either Professor Jason Whittaker, Eva MacDonald, or indeed Christy Bond? You've got about 120 seconds.
Oh, well, oh, God, now you're putting me under pressure.
But you can cope. You know, what was it like working with Michelle Gomez in a kind of photoshopping way?
Oh, well, she was brilliant to work with.
Marvellous. That's what we like to hear.
You know, as you would expect. Not at all scary, you know. And also, she's very good at telling you, you know, you stand there. They sort of mind powers work very well.
Yeah, that's very important, because otherwise it's working through that. Any quick questions, Richard?
Yeah, I would say, what are you most looking forward to now, film-wise, TV-wise? That's
okay.
That's a good question.
Jason, any chance to actually, betwixt Xbox and...
Oh, and a Game of Thrones addict, so I'm literally waiting for that next series to come out, yes.
Okay, Eva?
Oh, I don't know. Any good film that comes out?
Any good film that comes out, except Pixels, which obviously is not right. Anyway, add movie Adam Sandler doesn't work. Christy?
I'm really looking forward to seeing the new series of The Walking Dead and also the new series of Once Upon a Time, because I am a Once Upon a Time addict.
Right.
So I think it's quite, well, that looks quite interesting, this series, because the goodie is now the main baddie. So.
Yes, Dark Swan.
Yeah.
It just goes to show. I'm quite looking forward to the latest incarnation of Star Trek. Not Star Trek, the Doctor Who. In fact, no, Star Trek as well, because that'll happen, I'm sure, before too long.
That's back. Well, new movie in July.
Yes, exactly. 50th anniversary next year. 50 years of Star Trek. Telefantasy Society 2. I said it a different time. Don't worry, Jason. We'll coordinate that. We're still looking at the sort of the... Mind you, Telefantasy Society 2, are you up for that, Christy?
If I'm still here, I hope I'm still here.
Are you up for it, Richard Edwards?
Oh, yeah.
There we are as well. Oh, such a routine. Jason, have you enjoyed your debut?
Very much, thank you.
Excellent. Eva, you're back again tomorrow morning?
I am indeed. Excellent. It's always a pleasure.
Christy, okay for yourself?
I will be back in a few weeks after graduation.
Richard, has it been good for you?
Oh, awesome, thank you.
Excellent. And how is the child, by the way? I mean, is she sort of, you know, because she's been getting to a fair number of months now since we last spoke, or at least since obviously it was just a month ago. Is she keeping well?
She's excellent. She's about 40 months now, yeah.
Good heavens, 40 English months of age.
40, yes. Yeah. So it's easier to say three in a bit, I guess.
Yeah, I would have thought so, but still, time, as we just said, it's an illusion in every sense of the word. Thanks to Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Annette Andre, Nicolette Atkins, Emma Tinson, Phil Linus, Jenny Trent Hughes, and of course Richard Edwards. Richard, I take it you'll be back with us very shortly.
I hope so. That would be lovely.
Excellent. And to take us up to the news at the Sky News Centre, a little theme from Joe Kramer's Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. In the studio, Professor Jason Whittaker, Christy Bond, Eva McDonald, thank you. Thank you, dear listener. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.